Certainly, SEO is not dead, and GEO is not the be-all and end-all. Do not crawl in the dust. And if you see things like less and less and less crawling, or more pages showing up in things like discovered not crawled, or crawled not indexed, discovered not indexed, so forth, that's probably a sign that you need to look at the overall quality of what you're producing. In LLMs and RAGs, there is this recency impact, and there's also like this lost in the middle impact. So a long piece of content will maybe have like a section in the middle that doesn't really get spotted as easily.
Willkommen zu einer neuen Folge von Marketing Meets Technology. Hier hörst du Insights zu Digital Marketing Strategien und Technologien. Viel Spaß bei dieser Folge.
So today we have another SMX special. My guest today is one of the sharpest technical minds in all of SEO. Dawn Anderson is the founder and managing director of Bertie, an international SEO consultancy based in Manchester, UK, and she spent nearly two decades working in digital. What makes Dawn really special, though, is her rare gift of taking a dense academic research, something like Google BERT, and natural language processing, which is all, you know, all the rage right now, and neural ranking models, and turning them into practical strategy that real teams can actually act on. You know, not just like keeping it theoretical, but really making it act on. And this is something that makes it really special. And if you've been to PubCon, Brighton SEO, SMX, or MozCon, you've certainly seen her on stage. She's brilliant. She's very generous with her knowledge, what we're going to profit from in this podcast as well. And she's always a few steps ahead where search is heading. And she just told me she's already also studying computer science to be even more ahead, to understand, you know, how AI really works and how AI rankings really work. So that's really amazing. Dawn, it's an absolute honor to have you here. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for the invitation. And I'm looking forward to having this chat. Yeah, and being at SMX as well. Yeah,
SMX is obviously amazing, but you were already at SMX New York, you just told me, and you did the keynote there, right?
Yeah, it was, SMX Advanced in the US. Yeah, I did the keynote there back in June, and that was really good. People are lovely, of course, and lots of things to learn. So, yeah, and I imagine the SMX Advanced in Europe will be exactly the same.
Yeah, it's advanced. Yeah. You get to meet all the amazing speakers, and it's super advanced. We'll talk about SMX a little bit later and then what the advantages are and everything. But I really wanted to start off with the topic of myths and realities of AI search. Because I think that is something you can shed more light on because you've done so much research and you're really deep into the topic.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of feel that maybe now things are starting to settle down a little bit, but obviously this past year has been a wild ride for misinformation in the SEO space, you know, with the whole like, is it GEO, is it SEO, is it AEO, is it EIEIO, whatever you want to call it.
What do you call it?
Well, I just call it AI search and SEO still, you know. Yeah. Obviously, there are more layers appearing in our space, and that's a wonderful thing actually, because it stops us getting bored and, you know, it keeps us on our toes. But certainly SEO is not dead, and GEO is not the be all and end all. But what I have seen is that, unfortunately, whenever there's a void of knowledge, I think instead of us saying, well, we're really just learning as we go along with this, I feel like people in the SEO space or any space where it's competitive, they feel like they have to fill the void with something, almost like guessio, I always call guessio, because it's not like paid search where somebody's telling us the rules and it's black and white, there's right and wrong, there's something that works and something that doesn't, and it's very simple and Google will tell you and even help you do paid search. Whereas with SEO, it's very much we're having to fill in gaps. Google won't tell us straight out exactly how to do SEO, but it will give us guidance, so on and so forth. And search engines are obviously increasingly providing us with more tools now. But what's happening, obviously, is that people do still fill in a lot of gaps. I would say, it's starting to settle down a little bit because we're starting to realize that, you know, we don't need to break our content up into tiny, tiny pieces for search engines to understand it. In fact, Google has said, I'm going to come onto the subject, as we know, of chunking and so on. Mm-hmm. But that was a really obvious one where people were jumping on things, thinking that they needed to immediately break their content up into tiny pieces so LLMs could understand it. So there's just, as I say, a lot of misinformation that's been flying around, I would say, particularly this past year, but starting to settle a little bit now, you know.
So would you say that chunking is a valid method, or would you say it's just
I think
SEO?
It's not. Yeah, it's not a method that SEO have to do. It's as simple as that. It's definitely a method that LLMs use, but to a large extent, it's been a huge part of large language model understanding for many, many years because of the notion of a context window. And BERT, to a large extent, had this notion of chunking too, because anywhere that you want to take context as well as just words on a page into consideration, you have to decide on how big is that context window going to be. Yeah. Are you going to take in a full sentence around a word as context? Or are you going to take just a few words to one side and a few words to the left? Because as we know nowadays, context is bidirectional. It looks at both before and after words. And that's the whole point of natural language understanding. Or are you going to take into consideration the full page of context, because search engines and large language model trainers can do that now. But the bigger the context window, the more expensive it is, because the way that, for instance, attention works is that the context of a word has to look at that context in relation to every other word that is within the context window. So it becomes extremely computationally expensive the bigger the context window is. Yeah, because you literally are looking at every word times every word and so on and so forth to get almost like this matrix of understanding. So there's absolutely no point in SEOs trying to guess at how big that context window is that a search engine's using. Yeah. There's also about 12 different types of chunking as well. So which one is the search engine using? We really don't know. They're not going to tell us. Yeah. So, and also what will happen is if you try and manipulate these things, it's a little bit like keyword stuffing or some of these other like underhand approaches that, you know, that have been implemented by SEOs over the years to try and get an advantage in natural language. What happens is at some point or another, search engines will work it out themselves in terms of what is the best balance for them to chunk things on their side. And if you've manipulated stuff, you're going to stick out like a sore thumb. Yeah, because they'll have like the whole point of search is that search engines are trying to emulate humans naturally searching. Yeah, so if you try and manipulate things to favor yourself with a machine, as that machine tries to become more human-like in its methodology, you just stand out obviously as somebody who's trying to manipulate machines. So I can see that people can utilize like scripts and so on and so forth to like try and build like chunking approaches, but there's not really a huge deal of point other than to like test these things, to tinker around with stuff. And I for one would actively encourage that we just try and see how these things work, but it doesn't necessarily mean you have to implement it in your search strategy, because it does make you stand out as almost like a spammer. And the unfortunate problem is with a lot of these approaches now, as we're testing these new areas of AI search, a lot of the approaches do look like spam, you know, that are being implemented by people. You know, and we're seeing a lot of people like build automated systems that just churn out AI content at scale and just keep throwing it out on a schedule and so forth. No human intervention. AI translations like just churning out loads and loads of, I mean, there's nothing wrong with translating content in my mind with AI, as long as then you get a human to double check it. Yeah. Guardrails or creating content with AI to some extent. And again, you know, we can utilize these things for efficiencies and planning and ideation, but it's about making sure the quality is high enough and making sure that you have that human oversight to keep things within a threshold of acceptance. See, what's tending to happen, and I see that there are people calling it AI, Mount AI, where AI search or generated content that's just done that scale using AI just goes up and up and up and up until it doesn't. So it's one of those, it works until it doesn't.
Yeah.
A little bit like for those who've been around quite a while, the days of Panda, you know, that was the summer of 2011-12, they were decimating times for people's search strategies.
Oh, yeah.
Panda, then Penguin. And I can see that that's going to happen again, but obviously maybe it's a bit harder for search engines to work out what is AI search and what isn't, because even some of the humanizers are out there. People are utilizing humanizer tools to make things look more and more natural. But in reality, these are just article spinners on steroids and with AI assisting it. So at some point, there will be some patterns that will start to emerge that search engines will pick up on. And we see them, the obvious ones already, the Zs everywhere and the M dashes and so on and so forth. Not that there's anything wrong with using an M dash. It's obviously a part of correct grammar, but people, I think, are now petrified to use an M dash.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's gone the opposite way. We're kind of throwing away good grammar because M dashes look like we're doing things with AI search. So in reality, there's just a lot of like people just guessing at things at the minute and trying to fill gaps, because also at the same time, we're also getting a lot of senior leadership teams asking, hey, why are we not appearing here? And
yes.
I think people feel that they have to say, oh, it's because of X, Y, and Z, or let's do this and fill a gap with a strategy, even though that strategy may not be the right approach, just because they're really scared of saying, we don't know yet, let's just work it out and just appreciate that this is still a very small part of search overall. So it's disproportionate fear on the SLT side of things, senior leadership, that's maybe driving people to fill voids with myths and misinformation, which obviously just get repeated and this becomes a circle of more misinformation. Yeah.
Oh yeah, of course. No, that's how it works. That's how the myth of SEO is being kept alive, and also like how SEOs at some point then will be discredited again as being kind of like
yeah.
Yeah. That's what we've had for a long time.
Snake oil salespeople. Yeah. It's like, it's not good, because I think we went through a period where we're actually starting to become increasingly credible, and then AI search has come along and it's just kind of blown us a little bit out of the water, really, in that regard. Yeah.
So,
but, you know, we'll survive as an industry.
Oh, we always have. We've survived every update, so we'll survive this as well. But
exactly. What
I find really interesting is, what do you think about, so how do you approach the topic of content right now? Because Google has also changed their, basically how they say they rate content. So they said in the beginning, they said it's fine as long as it's good content. We don't care if it's done with AI or not. And now, obviously, they are really attacking AI content as well. So if it's not the highest quality, it's definitely gone. And as you just said, I mean, most of the AI articles are just spun articles on the same again. But how do you see the whole topic on content creation?
Well, I mean, I think Google has said that it's not the AI that's the issue; it's the content quality. I think the problem is people are tending to presume that, well, we don't need humans; we'll just like feed it all into like an LLM, Gemini, whatever, or some Claude or whatever. And it will just say, we want a load of articles, produce it. And then they just get somebody to just publish it. That's the problem. It's the problem of no consideration for the stuff that you're producing, really. So Google have talked about this notion of commodity and non-commodity content as well.
Mm-hmm.
The commodity content is stuff that anybody could produce, and it's things that, you know, in reality, it doesn't require human thought. It doesn't require, you know, you could literally just, it takes a few minutes to put something together, or an LLM could just generate it very easily. And to some extent, I think that there is on a site, still a need for commodity content, because if somebody regularly comes to a website, they may want reference material. So if it's SaaS, for instance, the SaaS space is very much information driven, in that a lot of it is technological, it needs a lot of explanations and so forth. So reference sections on say, on SaaS sites are always really useful, like a glossary is useful, particularly in certain verticals. But that doesn't mean, for instance, that you can have just that on its own. I think it's about making sure you have a balance of every different type of intent that is relevant to your audience met, but to a high standard, if you like. AI search, for instance, if you look at some of the travel sites out there or some of the financial sites, such as stock market sites or whatever, they utilize AI really, really well. They'll do summarizations, like a weather site may summarize the weather, but it may also augment it with other human added value or database-driven aspects. And I think there's nothing wrong with using AI, because you can use it incredibly creatively to create content. But at the same time, you have to have that balance. And I think that's what it is. It's just everything's always been the overall site pie. So years ago, you know, people could generate via PHP, just a load of automatically generated template sites, you know, like programmatic SEO. Yeah. Which again, in itself is nothing wrong with it. But when you're doing it and it's just thin content and you just get a database and chuck something out just to get indexed and ranked and get traffic, that's the problem. So it's the intent behind it becomes spam versus adding value. So I think that's it. It's about what's the intent of the person that's creating it? What's the value overall of this site and everything that it offers? Is there a balance between utilizing things that for efficiencies like databases in the background? Yeah, because there's no point having humans sat there creating things that could be created via databases when it's a data-driven site, yeah? Such as, you know, stock market prices. You wouldn't have somebody up sat there, a human, updating all that. You'd have it driven by a database. You wouldn't necessarily have a human sat there summarizing it. You may have some insights, but then you might have a really good and extensive article giving opinion from a human. Yeah. So it's the balance. It's the balance of everything and the overall site itself, I think.
Interesting. I like the part of the balance. And I think it's also with Google is the same. If you have one bad article on your website and you have thousands of great ones, it's not a problem.
Exactly.
If you have one good one and 1,000 bad ones, that is a problem.
Exactly. That's it. It's just a general, what is the overall quality of this presence? Yeah.
How do you think they measure quality at Google? Do you have any insight into that?
Well, I mean, we have the quality raters guide, and I think quality is determined by, a few things. Obviously, they have the quality raters themselves, and they have, for me as well, the core updates are an indication of quality to a large extent. But quality is relevance as well. So I know that Martin spoke recently about what a core update is, and I've read quite a lot of stuff in forums and in information retrieval that talks about this notion of updating quality and making sure that the human raters are in place, to ensure that what people are getting returned from search results are aligned fully with what they were searching for. So, because relevance changes, you know, so for instance, if somebody's looking for Apple 14 or Apple, then when the 14 phone comes out, or the 15 or whatever, 60 or whatever number it is now, you should show the most relevant one. But or when somebody types in Apple generally, what do they want? The intent will shift, and to some extent, quality is about making sure in search that you're returning what matters to the searcher at that particular moment in time. Yeah, so that's quality. Churning out loads of AI stuff with the intent of just spamming, that's not quality. Yeah, that's obvious. I mean, this is years old, but there was a notion of do not crawl in the dust. And if you see things like less and less and less crawling, or more and more pages showing up in things like discovered not crawled, or crawled not indexed, discovered not indexed, so forth, that's probably a sign that you need to look at the overall quality of what you're producing. But quality is meeting intent in the moment, and I know that, for instance, with core updates, they gather all the click data. It's not that they are ranking things based on clicks. It's just they're analyzing the click data that they build over time to understand what is quality. And as such, what is relevance, if that makes sense, between these updates. They utilize this thing called normalized discounted cumulative gain. They then push it all out to quality raters, human raters. I think they also have about some element of machine quality rating going on as well. Because again, I've seen a lot of that in the IR space, but they'll always have some humans in the mix, yeah? They call it human in the loop. Also, quality is flagged by people saying in search, this is a rubbish result or whatever, yeah? So quality is very objective, yeah? We know ourselves what poor quality looks like. It's spam and that kind of thing, yeah?
Yeah.
But I think search engines basically build up a mathematical picture of what it looks like and then push that figure out across the whole of search algorithmically.
Oh, very interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we've always suspected, that they do that, that they at least measure, you know, who clicks, who searches something, clicks on the page, comes back, clicks on the next result as a strong indicator to show if that was quality or not, or at least if that was what the user wanted to find.
Yeah. Yeah, it's more around understanding the intent of the query. What was it? Was it what people were looking for at that particular time? Yeah. So it's an interesting, fascinating field.
Let me ask you for one last myth, and what do you think about it? So, what do you think about listicles?
I think that they work, but I think it's sad that they work. And I think Google or the search engines or whoever, the LLMs, they need to get a grip of it, because I did see that actually, though, it appears that what is happening is sometimes people create these self-serving listicles and they don't even appear in their own listicles in search. So I feel like that's a sign that at least search engines and Google in particular are trying to combat it. I think part of the challenge is that LLMs and AI search, if you like, it's always been like natural language processing has always almost been like a very, very separate part of information retrieval, not in the same camp as traditional search. Yeah, that's mm-hmm. what I've seen in looking at the IR community. And if LLMs had worked on their own from the start without the need for search engines, we probably would be really worried about the future of SEO and generally search now. Seriously. But they didn't, because they're too driven by probability determination, just guessing, next word guesses. Yeah. So they need this reinforcement, which, as we know, is RAG and web search. And they're obviously always out of date as well, because you can't keep retraining a large language model so that it's up to date with everything, including the last, the last few days of news. We know, for instance, that 15% of search queries every day are new, and they're largely driven by real world events that have never happened before. So a large language model cannot cope with that. So what's happened is, to some extent, is you've got these two communities that have been building things. Now, all of a sudden, they have to rely on each other. But what that's meant is that, in my mind, web search has very much been on top of adversarial search for a long time. So the spam, yeah? So traditional search was getting quite good at defeating spam. It was rare that you saw stuff, yeah? But you've got this whole other community here that didn't probably even consider spam, yeah? And all of a sudden, they've just discovered the SEO world, yeah? So I think that there's like, they're having to learn about adversarial tactics, the LLM world, yeah? Obviously, as they collaborate more and more between web search and LLMs, and Google are obviously bringing more and more LLM stuff via Gemini and so forth, and AI overviews and AI mode into search, I think over time they will get a grip of it. But it does still work for now, but it saddens me. And I think if you can hang on and not do some of these cheap and nasty tactics, I think in the long term you'd be rewarded. But it's very hard to say to a senior leadership team, we don't want to do these things, because they're seeing competitors do stuff and getting an advantage. This is sad. It kind of draws us all back towards spam, which we shouldn't be having to do, because search engines like Google and Bing and so forth are saying, on the one hand, don't do these things and, like, you know, try and stay on the good path, but then we're seeing that these dodgy techniques work. So sad, but true at the minute. Hoping that they'll get a grip of it as soon as possible.
Yeah, without the 20 years of spam protection and spam avoidance that Google has built on Google.
Exactly, yeah.
LLMs
yeah.
would not be usable.
Well, funnily enough, I did a talk at SEO Week, not this year, last year, and that was talking about the IR world and SEO being frenemies forever. Looking at how years ago, the IR world had a whole track at one of their conferences on adversarial search, which talked about how, you know, web marketing and SEO was just not aligned with the world of IR at all. That we want different things. Obviously, we want to rank. They want to like make sure that we don't rank anything unfairly and so forth. Mm-hmm. But there was this whole like field in there that was literally designed for adversarial search. Yeah, and over the years that track disappeared because I think that they mostly had it solved. Yeah, and then all of a sudden, LLMs have come, and now you're starting to, and you look in the IR papers, you'll see that there's a lot more stuff around adversarial LLMs and stuff. Basically, like defeating the enemy, which is spam.
Yeah.
So at some point, they'll catch up. I think to a large extent, as RAG develops, because RAG's gone through its own evolution since 2020, where it was started off as naive RAG. Came advanced, then modular, then graph RAG, and now agentic RAG. And that's really followed a path from just being like basic search to now moving forward and including things like semantic RAG and knowledge graphs are in it. So there's a catch up definitely as they work together, those two worlds, from my perspective as an outside SEO interloping and looking in. Yeah.
Absolutely. Maybe take us deeper into the AI world. And my question would be like, you've done a lot of research on BERT, and maybe explain what BERT is and then take us down the road to RAG. And yeah, what do you think has happened in the IR research? And, you know, how do we get from keyword matching to embeddings, yeah. phrase retrievals, neural rankings?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That'd be interesting.
Well, I mean, obviously we know BERT is quite old now. It's 2018, I think, the paper came out, and then it was the bidirectional. Oh God, BERT, what, bidirectional? I can't even remember what it stands for. Thing is, we just call it BERT, don't we now?
So yeah, exactly.
Bidirection, something from Transformers. Ah, I should know.
Yeah,
but anyway,
bidirectional
recommender systems. No.
No, it's called bidirectional encoder representations from Transformers.
Yeah, sorry, my mind went blank. But anyway, it's quite old now. It's 2018. The paper came out. It's massive by Google, and then they open sourced it. And then Google introduced a form of BERT in 2019 into search. But it was very, very basic because, as I said, the problem with BERT and all of these methodologies is it's very computationally expensive, too expensive really at the time for production search. Mm-hmm. But then as it went along, lots and lots of evolutions and leaner methods and so on and so forth came along. Facebook and all of these other big companies got involved, and I think they were creating things like Roberta, and that was like a leaner version. There were so many different types. I mean, there is now so many different types of BERT as well. I'm just doing my master's dissertation on and utilizing a model called FinBERT, which analyzes sentiment analysis on financial text to isolate just the sentiment of a sentence when there are multiple entities mentioned together, yeah, to split out the sentiment. So it's like those kind of things that is being used for. But obviously, as it's all gone on, lots of has happened in the IR world since then. You know, there's a lot more stuff that's gone on around revisit to nearest neighbors, semantic technologies where they utilize the content on adjoining pages to understand the separate pages and so forth, whereas historically it was always just the content in the page. Now it's even pages that are connected. Hence the reason why things like, you know, internal links are increasingly important because of the topic that's connected to each other. Clusters are increasingly important. And obviously then LLMs came out, the natural language processing world started to bring out, and ChatGPT obviously was massive.
Yeah.
Threatening search, you know, I think that really sent Google into DEFCON 1 mode. because they were fairly fragmented, really, in that they had Google Brain, then they had the DeepMind set up, and they had all these different competing research departments within Alphabet. And then, if I'm not mistaken, when ChatGPT started talking about how they wanted to challenge for search in 2022, Google then merged DeepMind and Brain together. So they had this almost like phenomenal research offering. And then they've started to bite back with Gemini, and they're just chipping away really now. And obviously they have the massive advantage in that they pull everything into the search interface itself, whereas ChatGPT is standalone still. So they do have big advantage, and ultimately they will win because they've got the data, they've got the research team, they've got the computes, they've got the historical stuff, they've got the community, they've got the 90. I was looking for Linux the other day. I think they still got a 96% of search share globally. So, you know, they've got all the advantages, really. They hold the cards. But then what's happened is, ChatGPT has come along, and as I say, AI overviews are starting. The search has got, Google's got rattled. They've then started to push in with AI mode and AI overviews over time. And obviously we've had uproar in the search base because it was all a bit rubbish. And now it's getting better and it will continue to do so. And I think there'll always be like a hybrid area now with natural search. There's still a place for people who want to go and search themselves. Because people sometimes, I like going off and having a route around and digging, going down rabbit holes and whatnot. Some people just want the answer spat out to them, and search will become generally more accurate over time because these things always improve. And RAG obviously has been a massive, massive part of that since it was introduced by the Facebook team in 2020. As I say, it was very, very simple, just a reinforcement of like, go and check that this keyword means this and augment it, augment whatever is retrieved in a LLM results as such, because they don't rank anything, they just return what's there. And then over time it's just improved, and now the future is very much agentic search. Funnily enough, I did at SMX Advanced looked at the point that we're at now, which is 25 years on from the birth of semantic search, when Tim Berners-Lee did his seminal paper that was about semantic search, and it said he had a vision of a brother and a sister that were talking about how they were looking for some medicine for their mum, and they were both looking online. They were getting their agent to like go on research. They were getting their agent to coordinate clocks and timers and all sorts with each other. And they were then coordinating their diaries via their own agents speaking to each other. And you would think that that would be somebody like Sundar Pichai, who talked about agentic search, talking just the other week. He was in an interview, talked about agentic search being the future, and that's what he saw the vision as. But in actual fact, it's really old. It's 25 years old, yeah. So it's just taken a long time to get here. Very circuitous route. Agentic search now with the likes of UCP and ACP, Agentic Commerce Protocol, yep, and Universal Commerce Protocol, all the stuff that goes on in the background that us SEOs suddenly just get bamboozled by. To some extent, you can see a lot of that happening when you look in the IR space, because they're always ahead. Research is always ahead of production. But even with that one, there were conversations going on between Shopify, Wise, I think Wise is involved, Shopify, I know Stripe is, PayPal, all of these background organizations that are involved in the e-commerce space, doing things to build agentic protocols together that us in SEO were like, we're too busy like sometimes spreading myths, making stuff up and debating like silly things like, you know, I think I haven't seen it for a while, but at one time it was the subfolder versus subdomain, 301 versus 302. I mean, how many years did we waste on these kind of silly debates? Now it's GEO versus SEO. It's like, I don't care.
Yeah.
Let's just look ahead and see what's happening in the bigger search space and the IR world and the machine learning world and natural language world. And then, you know, and look where we're headed rather than debating these minute things that don't really make that much in the way of difference. So, yeah.
So, I agree. But what is it then that actually moves the needle in AI search? What are the tactics?
Well, I think still doing the good things in search that you've always done make a massive difference. Yeah, because to a large extent, because until LLMs are not augmented with RAG, you know, most of it is driven by search anyway. So most results are coming back from RAG. That's it. Yeah. So web search is an augmentation. So just do all the good things that you always did. Keep improving quality, adding value, and so on and so forth. And, you know, maybe there's some nuances, like freshness matters more than it ever did with LLM. Yeah. Because RAG now is always hungry for like the latest on things. Yeah. You know, realize that you're probably not going to get indexed for as long as you did previously, because RAG also possibly relies on something called, you know, it's probably a bit prone to being susceptible to what they call the curse of dimensionality, which is a bloated index is probably never going to help RAG. So they want to make sure they de-index things as quickly as possible and not relevant. So just accept that you're probably not going to stay indexed with those old pieces, that to make sure you're updating things really regularly. Freshness. Consider things like in LLMs and RAGs, there is this recency impact, and there's also like this lost in the middle impact. So a long piece of content will maybe have like a section in the middle that doesn't really get spotted as easily or weighted as much. But at the same time, I think the likes of paragraph passage indexing that we've all forgotten about, but we all had a big hoo-ha about years ago, I think that probably helps with the lost in the middle impact, because search engines now are looking increasingly at parts of a page rather than a full page as such. So, you know, I would say keep focusing on producing the content quality. You know, I think it's sad to see that people have been laid off because other organizations feel that machines can do with the job. Machines can help with, you know, ideation and so forth, but the human aspect will become prime value in the future. And that's the non-commodity content that Google's talking about. Mm-hmm. Adding that human perspective, that experience aspect that a bot or an LLM can't have, that because it doesn't have a concept of true human experience. Yeah. It can pull things from other places, but it can't share that human experience. Yeah.
Very interesting. Before we come to the question where I want to go deep into RAG, you are absolutely right. Human experiences are definitely getting valued more. And that's why I also think that like a conference like SMX Munich or SMX Advanced in Berlin, SMX Advanced in the US, they're incredibly valuable, because that's something an AI cannot replace. For instance, you can always go into Claude and ask them for an AI strategy, of course, or an AI search strategy, but it will give you the medium of everything it's read and give you like something in between. It will read better than probably what most people will put out, but it will be the same for everybody who asked that question, and it will be absolutely mediocre.
True. Yeah, absolutely true. And also what will happen as well is, as we see now that there's an awful lot of this, like, quite spammy content around geo and all of these, and misinformation just recycling, you're probably not going to see that at high-quality conferences, yeah. It's AI slop, and it's just churned and just repetitive, as you say. And you're not going to get those conversations that go on in the background based on real senior SEOs' experience and people that manage teams' experience, or utilizing different tools, or taking different approaches and so forth. You're not going to get that in just search results. Yeah, and you're right. It is just very mediocre, because the way that LLMs work is they just take the general consensus of everything. Yeah. return. Yeah. So it's nothing exceptional. It's just the average. It's the mean of everything. Yeah.
Exactly. And it's usually better than what normal people do when they have no clue what they're doing, but it's way worse than an expert would do. And the interesting part also is, because in SEO, it's very specific for SEO, this issue. Like a lot of industries, they have clear rules and clear ways how to do something. In SEO, it is a lot of guesswork and it's a lot of experimentation and testing.
Yeah.
So that means real results can only be produced by a few people. And these people sometimes publish this or they don't. And then there's a lot of talk going around with random stuff. A lot of YouTubers creating YouTube content with talking about whatever SEO does or whatever Google thinks. And the more people reproduce this, the more the AI thinks this is what's actually happening.
Yeah.
And the worse it gets.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got a classic example of that. There's the topic of information gain, which is rife in the SEO world, absolutely rife. But in actual fact, it's based on just one paper. You will not get any search, an IR person associating SEO with information gain at all. Because information gain is actually a concept that is absolutely huge, but in the machine learning world around classification modeling, it's a classification, part of a classification algorithm, and it's so massive in the mathematical space that actually it was created by Claude Shannon, and that is, and he is so fundamental to the mathematical information world. Is he, Claude was named after him, Claude the machine learning model.
Crazy.
So he's massive. So what it means is it's based on, you utilize, it's basically around how deep a classification model goes in splitting content, or not content, or trees, decision tree, because decision trees are, is as a form of classification modeling. So basically, information gain, also kind of known in a way as entropy, it looks at, is this split purer? Is it purer to this class than this one? So it's nothing to do whatsoever with adding value or whatever. Yeah, that's one patent. Maybe somebody's taken that concept a little bit and just utilized it in some way as a patent creator at Google. Yeah, but it's years ago. And what's happened is, despite the fact that actually it's to do with classification modeling and decision tree splits, of purity, what's happened is the SEO world has started to write about it. Now, if you go and look up information gain, at one time, it was always about what it should be about, which is decision tree splitting on purity of classification. Now, you look at it and it's filled with like SEO articles talking about it. Like it's the holy grail all over the shop. When actually adding more value, you don't need to think information gain for that. It's just obvious. If you add more value, you're going to rank higher. That doesn't take a concept. It's just literally add more value generally. So maybe somebody who's created that patent has utilized that concept, but the concept is predominantly 95% to do with machine learning, decision trees, and classification splitting on purity. But like I said, it's been utilized and exploited to the point where SEO has hijacked that term. And this is what happens. I go and look for things when I'm doing my dissertation now, and loads of stuff just been hijacked by the SEO world, around machine learning and information retrieval concepts. So it's what happens. So that's why you can't really trust a lot of what you read out there, because it doesn't take a lot. Within a search engine, truth is very much objective. Truth is objective. One person's truth is another person's lie. So there is that. But certain things, like, as we know, things like your money or your life, misinformation there is dangerous. Information gain, probably not dangerous. Some of these concepts around SEO, probably not dangerous. But it just goes to show that you literally need these special interactions at conferences, conversations with really respected SEOs and so forth, proper learnings, proper experiments and so forth, rather than just going off, Googling things, and then seeing stuff that's just been manipulated and just misinformation that's just spiraled out of control, because it becomes the truth. Becomes the truth in a way, but it's not the truth.
Yeah. My last question before we wrap up is, let's talk about RAG a little bit more. You mentioned RAG many times, and I'm pretty sure most of our listeners, they don't really understand how RAG works and why SEOs should actually care about RAG.
Yeah. Okay. So, well, for a start, RAG is just a, I don't think I've even mentioned what it stands for. I keep saying it. Retrieval Augmented Generation. So effectively, what happened is, as we know, with large language models, when they first came out, they were really, really, really hallucinatory. They used to make stuff up based on probability. You know, it's that notion of how did the chicken cross the... The obvious word is road, because that's a years and years old joke, yeah? But it could be anything. It could be, as Will Scott gave a really good example and said, it could be, how did the chicken cross the Mediterranean? How did the chicken cross the farmyard, etc. Mm-hmm. But because road is like 90-odd% of what the probability is, an LLM would just get road, yeah, because it's guessing based on probability. And this is the problem. Without something to guide it and say, well, that's not true, it just spits out all sorts. And that's how we ended up with things like the, you know, running with scissors in your pocket. When people ask, should I run with scissors in my pocket? Oh, yes, run with scissors in your pocket. Or should I eat a rock? Yes, a rock a day is really good for you. Yeah, it used to be ridiculous. How can I keep the pizza up, the cheese on my pizza? Use some glue. All of these ridiculous things that were just hallucinated, but really obvious. But then what happened as well is there's quite a lot that were not obvious, but still hallucinations caused a lot of trouble. For instance, there was a lawyer who literally utilized ChatGPT and used some previous cases, past precedent, to, in front of a court. And actually, those had been made up by ChatGPT, didn't exist. So that's hallucinations to a large extent, like, can be very obvious and very unobvious. And they still happen, but less so. And the reason why it's less so is because retrieval augmented generation has been developing at the side. And what that does is it literally goes and checks in search to see, or in other kind of database. It's not just search. It could be that a company may be utilizing an internal large language model. And if they feed it a load of internal data as well, like a database or a documentation or whatever, they can train the large language model to provide better answers, yeah, by augmenting the output with other forms of credible data. And to a large extent, large language models now utilize web search to do the augmentation to keep the guardrails in place, yeah? But when it first started, it was very, very basic. It was just like, what does this word mean? Well, let's go off to web search and just do a keyword search or as an augmentation keyword.
Yeah.
It was very basic. And then eventually it started to become more based around semantic search. So that caught up a little bit. So instead now of expecting a car to not be the same as a motor, semantics came in, a little bit of things, not strings. That got augmented. And over time, because different types of RAG have different computational costs and therefore financial costs attributed to them, search engines and other LLM providers or researchers started to use what they call modular RAG, which basically it means that different parts of retrieval augmented generation are utilized for different types of search. Yeah. So if it's dead obvious and somebody's looking for Apple and it's obvious that they're looking for a company, you don't really need heavy lifting of machine learning. Or navigational queries. Somebody types in, you know, SMX, yeah? Doesn't really need a lot of advanced machine learning for that. So it's about that. That was like a modular RAG is like utilizing certain aspects of certain things, yeah? And then obviously advanced RAG, the semantic side of it. Modular RAG decides whether to use advanced, naive, or whatever. And then graph RAG started to bring in knowledge graphs into it. Yeah. So these, like the knowledge graph, the databases in the background. Yeah. So that utilizes the connections as well as the actual content. And now agentic RAG is where we're starting to like utilize agents at the same time like Google announced at I.O. About the notion of an information agent that you can have running in the background. And to some extent, I think Gemini gems are a kind of agentic search rag type thing where you can integrate that with search. In the future, agentic commerce is going to come in. There's a lot of schema now around agentic search, I would say.
Yeah.
And also, that's another thing that people are always debating nowadays. Does schema help or structured data help with AI search? And maybe schema doesn't get included in the output now of LLMs as such, or it gets stripped out. But that doesn't mean that all that structured data that's been built in the background and that has already been pulled into normal search isn't helping, because it probably is, because that's already being taken into consideration in normal search, And obviously, it helps with GraphRag, for instance, because of the connections. And then the next one, obviously, as I say, is agentic search. So it's all evolving, and I imagine over time, it will just keep improving, So you've got this RAG, which is really the tying together of normal search with LLMs that's progressing. It's almost like a glue. So the more that develops, the more the two will combine. Cool. So I hope that makes sense.
Makes absolute sense. Thank you so much for this very brief but deep introduction into RAG, because I think it's very interesting to understand how it works and how it combines and why it's so important against hallucinations. So which conference are we going to see you next at? And where can we reach out if we want to get in touch?
Where am I going to next? I'm going to traveling wise, internationally, I'm going to SMX Advanced.
In Berlin.
And then I'm speaking at Search and Stuff in Turkey, in Antalya. I am also going down to London to speak in August at LLM Mastery. So there's that one as well. But that's just a day. And did I think where else? Oh, can't think of any more off the top of my head.
Where can listeners reach out if they want to get in touch and talk to you more about LLMs, SEO, AI search, and maybe even work with you?
Well, they can get hold of me through Bertie, my website, and they can get in touch with me via LinkedIn. If I'm not connected, send a connection request, of course. They can message me if they are connected via LinkedIn. They can contact me via X if they're connected again. They can message me. And those are probably the best places. Oh, Blue Sky, I'm also on there as well. I'm not massively active on the socials to that extent. I'm pretty busy and don't put a huge amount out on socials anymore. But they will see me at conferences here and there. And I'm always open to a chat.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. And see you at SMX Advanced and SMX Munich. And it's going to be amazing to listen to you. So everybody who's listening here, definitely reach out to Dawn. Follow her on all her socials. And then I can only say thank you, Dawn, for the information and being so generous with the information, as we said in the intro. And I can only say the listeners, thank you for listening, and I'll see you everybody again when it's time again for SMX specials or another Marketing Meets Technology podcast. So thank you for listening. Take care.
Thank you. And thank you for the invitation. Bye, everybody.
Das war's für diese Folge von Marketing Meets Technology. Bis zur nächsten Folge.